Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Spirit Therapy. My name is Nicole Tomasini, and I am your host, and I am joined by Diane Mallett, who is in Boston. I am in New York City, and we welcome you all to our topic this evening, which is working with our shadow self. So before we begin, I would like to take a moment to send some love and light healing energies to the warring places of our planet and those that want to make war, including Washington, D.C. So let's all take a moment and send some loving, peaceful, beautiful light energy to Syria and Washington, D.C., and Iran, Afghanistan, that we love our brothers and sisters, and we wish for peace in the world. All right. So it's a good way to start with the shadow side, since we're talking about the usually not so popular part of the human psyche, and therefore has translated into what happens across the world. So I'd like to begin with talking about a little bit of what Carl Jung, who started the idea of the shadow side, what he called it, what the definition is. So, right here. The shadow is the unknown dark side of our personality. Dark both because it tends to consist predominantly of the primitive, negative, socially or religiously depreciated human emotions and impulses like sexual lust, power striving, selfishness, greed, envy, anger, or rage, and due to its unenlightened nature, completely obscured from the consciousness. So whatever we deem evil, inferior, or unacceptable, and deny in ourselves becomes part of the shadow, counterpoint to what Jung calls the persona or conscious ego personality. So it's all that stuff that we don't want to think that we are, but yet we hear the voices of them so often, whether we like it or not. I'm sure they're more prominent in some of us than others, but I think we all, if you're human, it's part of you, and if you're not hearing it, that means you're really good at turning down the volume or have learned to work with it. So I'll let you
I think,
Diane, if you
want to
come in there.
I say, you know, it's great that you you basically categorize what, you know, most people know as the deadly sins, but a lot of people categorize these so-called deadly sins as the capital sins. And what that actually means, in essence, is those are the sins that we are most prone to do. We're most capable of doing these things. So to understand that our shadow self is really close to us, then we can understand it better. And then we can learn how to cope with these as they come about. Because if you put yourself into a category or something like that, you're not like you don't want to moralize yourself. I think to moralize or demoralize or categorize or I'm lustful, therefore I'm bad. You know, that you don't want to do that. But I'm lustful, therefore I'm human. You know, and what you then do when you have lust is, you know, how do you act on it, or what do you do when you engage with your shadow self? So how can we describe these things that what, you know, some people call the deadly sins or the capital sins, but basically the shadow self, those elements about ourselves that we're not too happy with when they come up, what do we do when they come up? And what's the best methods to, you know, dissipate them without harm? and make sure they don't jump into the collective, that we don't spread it. So, I mean, we always try to surround ourselves with light and light energy and goodness, but, I mean, even Mother Teresa suffered from envy and sloth and jealousy and rage because she's human. Even Jesus did, and he's mm-hmm. one of these people that, you know, 2,000 years were going on his example, and if you look at his example, he had examples of all of these capital sins, so to speak, in his daily environment. And so it's a great topic. It's something that, you know, people, we just all want to be good, but the thing is, we're never all going to be good. We're not made that mm-hmm. way. We're not supposed that way.
Yeah, it's not the whole picture. And I think just the fact that the Catholic Church has deemed them sins, I mean, maybe it goes beyond the Catholics, who knows, but, you know, they're famous for the Catholic sins, right? But the fact that we think of sins as, oh, you know, I can't do these things, well, it really separates us from ever going in and bringing that other side of ourselves into the light, and because you can't have the light without the dark, but if it's working together, then it really shows the whole picture. So then what happens? It starts to come out in different ways. We lash out at each other. We start wars. You know, we slap around people that we love. We beat ourselves up, all these things. So I think just in general, the idea of negative things that are always negative and positive, they're always positive, we would do well as a society to relax a little bit with these labels. You know, just, we know what it can be. Just let's chill out on saying, oh, it's bad, and therefore, oh, kill it or run from it, or just don't engage it, go away. So
right. And it also, I mean, it's one of these things that, unfortunately, like, there are self-destructive patterns or behaviors. There are addictions, our depression, our anxiety, our disorders, our guilt, our shame. It's, you know, it's our abuse. It's the abuse of, like you said, the abuse of when we hurt someone physically, emotionally, mentally. You know, when we lie, we cheat, we steal, we betray. You know, we do this, and, you know, why are we doing it? Are we protecting ourselves? Are we protecting other people? Are we doing it out of fear? You know, and where do we get to the point where we're confident in ourselves, that we don't have to live in this dark side, you know? I mean, because it'll come up, it'll creep up, but do we have to live there? Do we have to live in hurt and in pain?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I need a list of go ahead.
I was going to say, we do have to meet our shadow self and get to know them, our
right.
other side, our dark side, in order to have the light, in order to have the healing that comes from all of this. So it's a fantastic topic and something
absolutely.
That everyone needs to look at.
Yeah, I need a list of shadow archetypes that we can get to in a minute. We have a caller. Lynn has been patiently waiting, and I would like to see what she has to say. Welcome, Lynn.
Hi, thank you. Hello, ladies.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi. My question is just, I just have a basic question. If anyone sees anything new coming up soon for me.
Anything new in terms of?
Of my, just, you know, concerning my life, my love life, anything.
Well, let's see. Your voice sounds familiar. Have we talked to you before?
You know, yours does too, and I don't know. I'm sorry. I think I your voice really does. We may have.
All right, well, let's see if Diane has anything that she can,
okay.
you know, throw real
okay.
quick for you.
Okay.
Sure.
And maybe actually, Diane, to make it more interesting for the listeners, you know, maybe if you can throw some cards maybe on what Lynn, you know, some shadow side work that would actually help her.
Oh, boy.
To bring things, you know.
Oh, boy. Uh-oh.
Don't worry. We'll be kind. We promise. You'll be our guinea pig. What can I say?
Okay.
Well, the one thing I'd like to say to Lynn and to, you know, I mean, obviously there's a reason that Lynn is called tonight. And, you know, the topic is on, you know, the dark side and, you know, shadow side. So it's definitely something that I feel that, you know, when someone is looking for something new, you know, what is new? What is up? What's my love life going to be like? Is there a new job in the future? The reason you're asking these questions, Lynn, is that you are in the middle of what the tarot calls the Hanged Man.
Okay.
The Hanged Man is, you know, that one card in the major arcana that is, you know, you're stuck with, you're bound to what is going on right now. So it's hard to look into the future. It's hard to deal with, you know, what, you know, hopes and dreams. And I do want to just stress that you create your own environment. So you really need to, as you're focused in the Hanged Man position, really work on your psychic connection to create abundance for yourself.
Okay.
It's one of these things that in order for you to have abundance in your life, you're going to have to work on some of the things that are in front of you today.
Okay.
And what I need to give you is not so much a reading, but I would like to move to my animal spirit guides. In spirit therapy, you often can connect with your spirits and your ancestors and a Native American and all sorts of Indian traditions. We use the animals to teach us lessons. And obviously a lesson for you to be learned. And this could pertain to your shadow self as well. I mean, what is it that you're going through right now that you're seeking out advice and help and guidance? So I'm going to pick a card that's not tarot-based, but it's more messages from your animal spirit guides and just give you a little help on that.
Okay.
And let's see for you, it's the kiwi, which is a bird. And it's a... Do a walking meditation each day for a week.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I was looking at when I was feeling this Hanged Man, is the need that you have to stay in a meditative state.
Okay.
And maybe for you right now, the best way to do that would be to walk. Because typically,
which I love, and I do it. I love it.
So some people prefer, like, to meditate by sitting still and, like, visualizing a place, you need to find a place and move through it.
Yeah.
Because you get out of this Hanged Man and smell things and feel things and sense things and be a part of. So in order for you to move away from the Hanged Man, you're going to need to start walking. Walking.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah,
I was thinking maybe a little bit more.
A little more, because I used to love to walk. I mean, I don't walk as much as I used to, but that was just my thing. It was just so, I don't know, therapeutic and all of that. Yeah.
Because walking really, I mean, I take walks a lot. And why do we love to walk? Well, we're outside, so the air helps immediately. then our bodies are in motion, so our fluids are moving around and we feel more life in our body, so that's helpful. And then our brain starts to calm down because the chemicals are now getting moved around and aren't stagnant, so we get clarity on things. But I think when we're stuck on something and we don't necessarily want to walk all the time because we get just the same story over and over, the broken record, like, yes, I know, and I can tell myself the same thing to make it better, but something is just, I need something else. So I think, you know, that's a lot of, also I use the animal cards. And also our sponsor, Daughters of Isis, does a lot of different oils. And so depending on how I feel, I'll either choose just, you know, run my hand over the oils that I have and see which one comes up and work with that energy. Like, let's say I pick owl medicine. Well, that's about seeing the unseen. So going past the same idea, looking for a third route. And that's why also I like the animal medicine cards, because I can say, all right, well, I'm looking for the unseen. Well, definitely, but how, what, how do I do it? So if you could pick another card for her, Diane, I think it would give a more clarification.
Should we do another animal card, or should I go back to the tarot? Okay.
Yeah, another animal.
All right. The honeybee. So it's about compassion and forgiveness. Is there someone in your life that you need to forgive? That you have
to forgive or to forget?
There's no anything.
Both, I guess. Yes, there is someone not in my life, but was. I mean, up until a little recently, was in my life. Yeah.
It says to, you know, to reap all the sweetnesses that life has to offer, focus on compassion and forgiveness. And compassion that you have a heartfelt empathy for the suffering and misfortune of others, yet remain somewhat detached, so you don't take on the distress and sorrow of that person.
Okay.
And requires that you first acknowledge and accept responsibility for your judgments.
Yes.
Rather than pretending they don't exist, professing that they always sustain to be non-judgmental attitudes, the next step is to release those judgments. To do so, if someone, so there's already someone that you've thought of, so this is the person that you've been of, that you've been judgmental of, and trust that the person comes to mind with the appropriate one and start and consider two or three specific criticisms that you have about this individual, preferably any particular word that about him, about that person. Are they selfish? Are they cold? Are they unjust? Are they anything that you find? And then go and...
The sirens always show up at the most opportune
time, right?
But it's punctuation, really. You know, it's like this is the alarm, you know, place that you can go to. So,
and you're just
the alarm.
This is the shadow that is haunting you right now. This is the part of your shadow self that you need to deal with, Lynn, is that you're judging someone. And it may be a very prominent part of yourself and a very small aspect. You may identify it by recalling the times when you behaved ways that resemble that you were criticizing. And once you discover that part of you simply says, I love you and forgive you, if necessary, repeat it 2-3 times and notice the emotions that come up. And in common,
that's so true, what you're saying, because yesterday, I think a couple of days ago, all of a sudden I found myself just out of nowhere just saying, I forgive you, you know? It just,
That's really what it is. This one of the darkest shadows that will haunt anybody, and a real block that I found with myself, with people tormented with depression, addictions, some of the truest shadows are resentments and judgments of other people. And
wow.
When we talk about ourselves, we're typically looking at ourselves. I mean, how many times when they use those expressions, when you point off your finger,
yeah,
back at you, you know, so write down the list of resentments and get them out. Get to a point where you can forgive, because until then, you will be at that caveman position. So this person, you need to forgive. You need to say it out loud. You need to breathe it. You need to feel it. You need to do it. And you know, you need to let it go and live it. Live in the forgiveness. You know, and recognize that you've probably been critical and judgmental. When you're dealing with, you're bringing in energy around yourself that you are fueling and making your shadow self stronger. You know, how do you want the shadow work to be revealed? One of the best tools Nicole and I, both of us have used for many, many, many years, she introduced me to this, I can only say about 20 years ago, was writing, and how important it is to keep track of our feelings and emotions through paper and write them on a paper. And I forgive this person before, and then just start writing. And I've been judgmental about this person because, and this person has hurt me because of these things. And see what comes out. And write it out. Write it out. And breathe it out.
Okay, and breathe it out, yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then forgive yourself. You know,
Oh, I did. I said it. Oh my God.
Good.
Oh wow.
So great. Wow. I'm so glad you call in.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad.
You know,
too.
That's
oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Do some. See what happens, and let us know how you know what your findings are.
Okay, I will. Thank you, Nicole. Thank you, Diane. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You
good
too.
Night.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Oh, it's so great that you brought that up about the writing, because I find for a scientific brain, it's very helpful, because if you felt the need to write, you felt something strongly, and then you can see, we can go back like once a month or whenever you feel and see like if there's a pattern of like the same thing coming through, like the same thing that always finds its way and starts poking.
Mm-hmm.
So, hang on. Line incoming. I just got the new iOS 7 for the iPhone, and it's got different icons. So I had to read what it was asking me. Anyway, but yeah, like poking through, you know, it's going to come through somehow. And I think a lot of, I mean, obviously, a lot of depression come from these things that just, it's like there's such a broken record, sometimes you don't hear it, and it's just draining energy. And it's just, it just keeps coming. So then we just kind of get used to it. It's kind of like Chinese water torture. It just kind of goes lower and lower until some part of you just goes, all right, stop, enough. And when you're in that spot, I always look for something else to say, but it's the only way that I can see is to stop and acknowledge what you're feeling and recognize it as much as possible. When you find yourself in any room, how do you find out what room you're in? You stop and you look around. So, and I think that's where it sounds easy enough, but of course, if you're afraid you're going to see something that's scary, you don't want to look around. And some people really are so afraid of truly looking around that they don't, and then you can get trapped somewhere and then wonder what happened. So I've never, and I'm interested to hear what you, your experience is, but I've never found anything that is worse when you actually look at it. It's always smaller. It's the fear of not looking at it and what you might possibly see, because we're so imaginative human beings. We can come up with all kinds of stories. That is always worse than what it really is.
Just laughing because it reminds me of this story, and this is a true story, and it's like your brain goes to the worst. You know, the Mayan calendar and how that was supposed to be the end of the world, and everything was supposed to be just like the end that day. You know, we're kind of prepping ourselves for end of the world mentality. And I live with a 13-year-old who, you know, watches the zombie shows every day, all the time. So she's got the end of the world mentality. And that particular evening, all the electricity went out in my house. And I immediately thought it was the end of the world. And it was just this jump to the darkest place. And you're right. You have to look around to assess the situation. But when we first initially get in that situation, the panic that strikes us, I know it's a metaphor, but legitimately the fear and panic that strikes us in our own minds. I mean, here I am, a very normal, stable person, and I'm running around the house like a lunatic. It's the end of the world. Looking out my windows, all the lights are out in the neighborhood, freaking out, thinking that this, you know, I don't have enough water stored. I don't have a flashlight.
I'm unprepared for the magnitude.
I'm not ready for the apocalypse by any way, shape, or form. And what happens is, you know, it gives us the ability to laugh at ourselves, and it gives us the ability to love ourselves, you know? I mean, look at the darkest places, and it reminds me of this author and book, this a writer who works on the spirit all the time, Alana Van Zandt. She talks about living in the basement of our lives, you know, constantly doing the same things over and over and over again, you know, being hurtful and doubting ourselves and not being, you know, feeling well, not being in constant disease and like dis-ease. And how we move from that is we move upstairs into the next room where there's light and when there's love. But we wouldn't have that light or love if we didn't know we needed to come out of the basement. We didn't know we need, you know, so you need to know that you've had troubles. That's what God or the Spirit gives us, is troubles to work through. And you're right. You write them down, you get them solid, and nothing is as crazy as you think it is. And there isn't anything, what's the most wonderful thing in the most compassionate thing that I found in my journey is that there's nothing that I've ever done that somebody else hasn't done. So I'm not unique, you know. I am not unique, and as fearful as, you know, my past and things that have come up in my past, you know, it's just I'm not unique, and I can look at myself and look at the hard parts and move away. And I've been through some depressive times in my life where depression really has owned me. And it was looking at myself in order to break through from those patterns. And I don't, you know, definitely do not live the same way that I lived before, which is wonderful. But it was a journey, and it was looking at the things that were the hardest of my life to deal with.
Wow. Yeah. It's so great what you say about I'm not the only one that's done this. And and that alone can be a real good grab pole, like, you know, so a ladder for you to climb out and realize, listen, you know, this is part of the human condition. And also when we learn these things, when we've been through these hard times, I think a lot of light workers definitely have been through this, because we have to be able to relate to what so many people are going through. And so when you've been through something that was difficult and you found your way back to the light, then you know what that dark room is. And so if someone else is in there, you go, dude, just look to your left. It's right there. You can totally get out. Like, you know the map for it. So, and, you know, if somebody's going to grab the information or not is up to them. That's free will. But at least you know what that is. And I think that's where the building of communities, helping each other and stopping with so much judgment, which is actually the first one of my shadow archetypes, is called the judge.
Let's get into that. I'd love to hear, I mean, now that we're at the second half of the show, what cool. do you have as some of the archetypes?
So, yeah, the first one is the judge, who can also be the jury and the executioner.
Oh.
He's the one that finds fault with everyone and everything, decides what's worthy, and takes a tally of past behavior and experiences to come up with a judgment. So I think we all know what that guy is. You know, I mean, that's what tabloids are based on, basically, so that we can judge these people and make ourselves feel better or worse about ourselves, and then the judging we do towards others and ourselves. So the judge.
That immediately makes me think of the news. Now, I stopped watching the regular nightly news a long, long, long time ago.
Uh-huh.
It's not to say that I'm not aware of what's going on in the world, because I'm fully aware of what's going on, and I choose to get my news different ways, but to watch the same exact news program being thrown out at us constantly, and to put myself to be the judge, the jury, and the executioner on a daily basis on people, and I don't even know their circumstances, and they throw that out there. We've been trained as a society to be the judge, the jury, and the executioner almost religiously on a daily basis, and putting ourselves in that situation. So that's a really interesting one, because I would find it difficult to get away from that position.
Yeah, it's definitely ingrained. Absolutely. I mean, my judge, jury, and executioner is fully intact. I don't think you can ever get rid of these. And I wrote them in a certain way. You'll see, you know, you can, but they all have a positive and negative to them. But this is part of us. And he's also the discerner. He's also the one that tells us what's going on, but then he can become too far and become a dictator. So there's that guy. Then we have the slave driver.
Uh-huh.
Work is never done. It's never good enough. And you work hard with no reward or appreciation.
Oh,
so,
I fall into that trap a lot. Mm-hmm.
It's that voice that says, oh, come on, man, what are you doing? Just watching TV? You know, you need to run the world. Let's go, and we'll never let you rest. So, but again, that
single,
guy also.
I was going to say, as a single parent, I put myself in a slave driver position. I am the slave driver and the slave all on the same, in the same hall, you know, and talk about the beating up of oneself when I can't make the PTA meeting, get the kid to the sports event, get to work, get home, bake the cookies, and have a nutritious meal, you know, and lunch ready. It's the slave driver that I'm not good enough all the time, and the slave that I'm constantly doing the work, putting myself into burnout. So those are that's a shadow self that I'm definitely dealing with on a constant basis. And I've moved into a what I've done, which is interesting because we're talking about healing our shadow selves. I've moved into a realm in the past few months where I'm working on self and I'm healing myself through meditation and food and light and love. And before I do any of these activities, I'm blessing them. So they get done as much as they're going to get done and as much as they're going to get done in the time that there's going to be spent on them. So instead of saying, I have to do this and it has to be done by this amount of time and this much has to get done, I'm blessing the activity, and whatever the outcome is the outcome that's supposed to happen. So it's taking away that slave driver mentality.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful. I think a lot of moms and anyone, but definitely moms, because you have this, to be a good mom, you got to do all these things. You got to be every woman.
I'm every woman. I mean, so go, bitch, go. Most of us by the heels. You know, you're like, wow. I mean, there's only so long you can keep that up, and again, and then you become your own slave, sure. So that relaxation into it and blessing the activity, yes, wonderful, good stuff. So, and then we have, and I'm going to say it's one of my favorites. This is probably the one I've done the most shadow work with, is the Nazi. Has, you know, nothing to do with Jews or Germans or anyone, but it's the archetype of the Nazi, who is the perfectionist, often to a fault and too far. If something doesn't fit in my plan of the world, kill it. My way or the highway, and a control freak. So this is the guy that's in the uniform, that's got to be perfect all the time, never stops to feel anything, is just driven and will find anything, any fault in any plan, anywhere. I mean, he's a mastermind, you know, he's a scientist, he's the occult. I mean, he's just got his finger in everything. And he wants it to be perfect. And so often it's like, it's not even about a beautiful, perfect world. It becomes about it being perfect because he said it was perfect. And it can really go, you know, to the Nazi extent. But if you can get this guy to work with you, how I've worked with mine is to put him to work on jobs that are necessary. For instance, when I'm making a decision and there's a lot of different factors to consider and I want to make sure that every single one of them is in place, I just unleash my Nazi on it and he gives me a tally of the things that can go right, things that can go wrong, things that are taken care of, things that are not, and will give me a constant reminder of what to do. But I've noticed talking to him, I mean, he is a character in my head, because I kept hearing this guy, and he was so brutal and terrible that I finally had to talk to him. And I understand that's his job. He's trying to do his job, which is to tell me everything that I need to know. But the decision-making is never his. It's always mine. And that's where we had to come to an understanding. So that's my story on that guy. Should I proceed?
Yeah. Work on that archetype. And, you know, perfectionism is one of our, it's just a defect that is tough. And we live in a world that, you know, I mean, you go in to the coffee shop and half light, with extra whip, extra skinny, splash of this, splash of that, you know, extra shot of espresso, and you know when it's not done right, like everything needs to be perfect.
Out.
And it's amazing because, you know, it's just we carry that person around with us constantly. I you know, we just don't think about how often that persona and that archetype comes into play.
Yeah.
Definitely in our society and upper class society and even, you know, lower class society, just all different types of, you know, even America in general. I mean, we have this, we have to be perfect. We have to be better than, we have to be, you know, our clothes, our schools, our jobs, you know, constantly criticizing ourselves about this perfectionist attitude. I like the fact that you had a conversation with this perfectionist inside you, because I know so many people who suffer from perfectionism. And when they don't, when they fall short of perfectionism, and the interesting thing about falling short of perfectionism is you only have to get one thing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not.
And then it's all wrong. Right. Then you fall.
And then it's
right.
All wrong. And that's some of the hardest work to do, because you, there has a lot of release has to go into that. I like how you worked and did conversations with yourself and getting to know this person and this persona within you to apply it to the proper strategies of your life, you know. And there's a time for perfectionism and there's a time to release. And you're the one in control. There's a time to pull the shadow out of the bag, so to speak, and there's a time to put them back. And it's balance. There's a lot of balance involved with that.
Yeah.
What's
and,
after
and I realized. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I realized that he talks so much that it is a part of me. It's clearly a part of me. So I needed to embrace it, you know, because then, you know, you become, if you don't make friends with this guy, you become the persecuted one. And again, I'm thankful for this play in my head, because it builds compassion even more so, because you understand, you know, what it is to be both. And to recognize that we have been so many different things. We've been the victim and the victimizer. So allowing that part and giving it a face, you know, there's nobody that you can't talk to. And if it's part of you, it's a beautiful thing, because it's also part of God, you know. So anyway, reiterate. So, okay, the next one is the jealous God.
with that one. The jealous God?
Yes. That's the one that smites down those who do not worship him. Fire and brimstone if you go against my wishes, and no free will. So, and I have to say that I don't mean to make them all dudes. They're not all dudes, but these are just kind of how, from my perspective, I see these. Some are just more male than others, but I'm sure they can go, you know, I'm sure some women or men will find that they will be the opposite sex, you know. But, yeah, the jealous God, the God of jealousy, that fiery, you know, just wants to take over, and that's mine. You're mine, or that's mine, when nothing is yours except for yourself, ever.
It's funny, because I immediately think, I was thinking that this is, I've been jealous, and I've definitely felt the green-eyed monster, but when I think of the jealous God, I think of my daughter. It's the one who smites down those who do not worship her. And I don't miss that age, that teenage age, that immaturity, that part of us that look at me, look at how awesome I am.
Interesting.
You know,
that is
how great I was.
Right. Well, that's fascinating because that's the other side of the jealous God, isn't it? It can be self love and it's my universe. I am creating it. You know, you can. That is so interesting. I would never have seen the flip side of the jealous God, but putting it in your daughter, who I know and is such a beautiful, light-loving soul. But it's true. She's got something in this new generation of especially girls, have this built-in self-worth and this built-in, like, yes, I came here to do something and I'm going to do it. And it is going to be, and it is going to be good because I created it. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. It's a huge tool that womankind can really use right now without becoming, you know, any one of these, you know, the bitch, the executioner, the Nazi, you know, or supposed effort. But having that and keeping it through teenage years would be very interesting how she gets through that. But anyway.
I've learned a lot about the indigo girls that are the indigo children that, you know, she's an indigo child. She has dimensions in her persona that I didn't reach even at her young age. An insight to almost empathic. She knows so much. And we see these children blossoming and becoming leaders in our community even at a young age of, you know, 4 and 8 and 6 and changing the world as we see it, you know, and it's pretty remarkable that these girls and these young men are coming up and they do have a different persona. Mm-hmm. Indigo children. Something to look at, maybe another topic for another day.
Definitely a good one.
It's a children who believe and possess special and unusual and sometimes supernatural traits, you know, and they have this ability to be empathic and have creativity amongst their peers, something a little bit special. And I saw that in her at a young age, and I was able, as someone who was skilled, and this is just, you know, how the universe put her into my care, because I'm one who can recognize that and give her the tools to build on it. So I think we have a definitely good relationship that way. So, but I do think of that with the shadow work and that jealous God. It's interesting because, you know, I smite down those who do not worship them.
Yeah.
Free will.
And, of course,
pretty much opposite of where she is, you know? So.
Very interesting. Yeah. And so the jealous God, you know, when it does go in the negative sense, is all consuming for the jealous one. And also, you know, it can mean fire and brimstone for the object of the jealousy, you know. So it's quite a powerful shadow side. And then the next one I think sits next to the jealous God is the hater.
Oh,
the hater. It's next to the jealous God and eggs them on. Yeah, I get that piece of shit, you know, good for nothing piece of. He loves the heat of the anger. He loves that the others fail. And love to know better than you do. So, you know, that's an interesting. I think that kind of speaks for itself. We all know who the hater is.
But I think it's something we all need to look at because the hater creeps in our society. You can be, and I'm going to give you an example because I've noticed this throughout my journey. I could be sitting on a subway or a bus. Job, and I can be perfectly content reading a book, listening to my music, everything is wonderful. And then, not wonderful, but I'm just getting from point A to point B. I'm not living in the hater. But then there are other times when I'm driving my car or, you know, and everyone's cutting me off and everyone's going too slow. And this person, and then the next thing you know, you drive next to that person and you've already categorized them as a woman, you put them in that, oh, it must be a woman in the wheel, or an old person, or or some kind of, you've created a hate, you brought up your own, what's the word I'm looking at, your own discriminations, you know, mm-hmm. you've pulled them right out, and you've put them on other people, and it could happen so quickly and so fast.
Sure.
So, you know, that is something that we really, I know it speaks for itself, but we fall victim to that as a society very, very, very quickly. You're in line at the bank. It's not going fast enough. You know, ever think that perhaps, maybe, when you leave the bank, you might be running into someone that you haven't seen in 20 years. You know, you never know. And to stop us from putting us into the hater environment, you know, just because you went to get your certain favorite type of something and they were out of it, what that does, instead of hating on it or hating on the establishment, it opens up the door to letting you try something different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's how barroom brawls get started. That's how drive-bys happen. That's how so much of the hate happens. It's that fiery heat. It comes up and boom, there we are, you know, and even people that are not hateful people, so imagine, you know, people that were brought up with a lot of hate, that trigger goes
tenfold. We look hated at a very young age. I mean, I remember my daughter saying that she hated me, and she must have been three, you know, and it went
mm-hmm.
from I love you to I hate you, and I went crying to my own mother, and I can't believe this happened to me. She said she hated me. And my own mother had six kids. She said, I heard that times six, 100 million times over.
Mm. It's funny because it's interesting. I think the hater is one of the easiest ones to turn around, you know, telling me about the three-year-old. I mean, just points out that hate is really the opposite coin of love. And so if you're in this hater moment, all you have to do is choose the opposite, and it's there, and it's done. I mean, I think it's really one of the easiest ones. It just takes attention to it,
exactly.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And which brings me to the one that I think is one of the most deadly, because it never stops, is the Debbie Downer. The Debbie Downer is always pointing out the negative. Always from the woe is me or victim mindset. The world is going to shit. It always has and always will. That's why nothing ever goes well for me, is Debbie Downer's quote, always.
that's the opposite of abundance. You're never going to get out of your hole, no matter what your hole is, if you're in Debbie Downer mode about anything.
Right.
So
she's the slow train that just keeps
it. My recommendation is just to get away from it. You know people who are in that energy. There's no reason to surround yourself with them. To, you know, at work, how many people will have that? One out of every, whatever, four. So just remove yourself from Debbie Downer, because what you're going to do is end up creating less abundance for yourself.
Yeah. And also the Debbie Downer that lives within ourselves, you know, the one that, you know, when we're feeling emotional and we're feeling like nothing's going right and we want to feel sorry for ourselves, so we go into Debbie Downer mode, which is, oh, you know, I can't, and this is never gonna, and oh, why is it so hard? You know, that's when you just got to call the warrior guy in and just go, all right, you know, or even the Knights of the Round Table and discuss some things, because that is just an endless loop of pointlessness, really. But I think it's the most deadly because it's so passive. It's the quintessential passive-aggressive, but it's like, and she can just sort of talk in the background or just sort of, like, be there, you know. It's not so aggressive that you have to deal with it. But, you know, we may not notice that creeps in. I mean, I get it for sure sometimes. And, I mean, me being me, it gets so annoying so quickly that I can turn it off fairly quickly. But sometimes her arguments make sense. So you sit with her for a while and you go, yeah, maybe it is all terrible. And then you go, wait a minute. All right, Debbie, settle down.
Oh, it's so true. I know just even the short time that I've had definite periods where being in under the sheets had seemed a lot better than getting up and doing anything. And, and like I said, we all have those moments, so you're not alone. Not alone.
Yeah, I mean, I that's why I think they're archetypes, because I think we can all relate to them. So there's just a couple more. Then we have the liar, the one that tells us what we want to hear, that shields us from others and from the truth, the storyteller and spinner of propaganda, makes us look bigger than we think we are, and hides us behind our own facade. So, but the liar also can be very helpful in getting us to a higher flying disc and feeling better. Because whatever we're seeing in our reality, sometimes it doesn't match up with what we want to be creating, but it doesn't mean that there's any reason to not feel like it's creating. But sometimes what we see brings us to another place. So you can tune in that the quote-unquote liar, the storyteller, the one that says, I am rich. I am everything I want to be. I am, and channeling that feeling is a wonderful thing. So I think that one's pretty straightforward. You know, lying to ourselves can be a good thing, a bad thing. Lying to others can be a good thing, can be a bad thing. But just how it makes us feel at the end of the day, right?
Are there any other ones?
The last two are the warrior and the rebel. So, and the warrior can also be the killer, the destroyer, the soldier, fights to defend your honor, what it thinks is right, searches for and destroys potential intruders, can use any ideology to justify the means. And I'll tag team it with the rebel, which never does what it's told, hates the status quo, wants to run free with no rules or constraints, can be an anarchist, doesn't like to be held accountable for anything, often steers us away from what is healthy because it's quote unquote boring, usually boring.
Relate to the rebel, and I know we don't have a lot of time left, but I've struggled with the rebel for many, many, many years, and having a history of addictions and running off to Europe and running to the circus and running, that is one that I feel of all of them that I've been able to expose my shadow and love my shadow on the rebel and be able to use it to my ability. So use it for good. Use those qualities that the rebel had made me outrageous, now able to use for good means. So,
yeah. And the rebel and the warrior usually go hand in hand, because especially when you're a peaceful warrior and you've come here as a light worker, you're usually a warrior of some sort and need to be a rebel to realize, to have the courage and the want to go against the status quo. So I think a lot of us can relate to these two. And, maybe we can talk about a little bit next week, about the warrior and the rebel, because I think that's a very socially conscious place to be, and a lot of us are feeling that. So,
nice.
So, we'll pick up this topic again at some point. Maybe we'll call it, a different thing. But I think this is very interesting. Thank you, Diane. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
So we will see you all next week. Thank you all for listening. And I'll play the song, but you'll probably only hear it in the archive. It's called I Will Be Light by Matis Yahu. And, yeah, check out daughtersofisis.com, our sponsor, and have a wonderful week. And we hope to hear from you and listen to your stories. Peace and love, spirits. Thank you, Diane.
Sit back and stay. Remember my ways. Oh, I like it out of my cage. Yes, I am a slave. Searching for some freedom, searching for some freedom. So I'm tender, sing them songs to spark memory. What is a man with no history? Where am I? Who am I? What is this place? We're just sitting in space. What did you do? Who do you love besides you? Beside you? Many times in the name of vanity.